put the picture up? That is who I'm talking about today. That's my daughter. She is 38 years old, and she was our firstborn, and it's been a journey. It's been a real journey. But first, I'm just going to tell you the story, and then I'm going to tell you what God's taught me from it. Brian and I had just been married 11 months, and she was 2 months premature. And what happened was we'd gone out to eat and with my sister and brother-in-law, and we got out of their car and got in our car, and I felt something warm and wet, and I went home, and I was bleeding a lot. And so my sister worked for labor and delivery. She was a head nurse there, and I had just been out to eat with her, and I called her, and I told her, she said, get in the car. We got to go to the hospital. So we went to the hospital, and what had happened, they said it was placenta abrupto, where the placenta tears loose from the wall, and you just start hemorrhaging, and it's very life-threatening to me, and it was very life-threatening to her. So they watched it for a while to see if it would stop. It didn't, and so they had to do an emergency C-section. Well, she was, I never had morning sickness. I never had one day, not one problem during my whole pregnancy. I have five sisters. None of them had ever had a problem, you know, so I was expecting things just to be like, you know, normal. And it turns out she didn't have enough fluid in her lungs. They say if you're going to have a premature baby, it's better that you have trouble because it makes the baby speed up its development. And one of the last things they receive is the fluid that keeps your lungs from sticking together. It's called surfactant. Now they have something that they can give a mother that will help that take place. They didn't then. And so what happened was she was born, but she couldn't breathe. And when she would try to breathe, her lungs would stick together. Okay. And then when she'd take in more air, it would pop holes in her lungs. So they said she was the sickest baby they'd ever had at Abilene Hospital. And she had to be put on 100% oxygen, a breathing machine breathing for her, you know, and she wasn't supposed to make it the third day. They told us to come down, you know, because she was turning blue. She wasn't going to make it. They asked us if they could put her on a medication they've never tried on newborns before. But what it does, they said she's struggling so hard, she just needs to relax, and this medicine will paralyze her, and then the machine can breathe for her, you know. And so we agreed to it, of course. And so slowly she would get better. She was in the hospital 30 days, but during all that, not getting enough oxygen, it caused a lot of damage. And being premature, she also had bleeding in the brain, and it also caused hydrocephalus, which is a fluid on the brain. And so eventually, after 30 days, she got to come home, and we were real excited. I was excited. I thought everything would be okay, you know? I was very naive. And so we brought her home, and then we realized that she couldn't see. We realized that she's having seizures. I mean, she'd do this over and over, and sometimes she'd just be sitting there, whop, she'd hit her head, you know. And she'd have like 30 or 40 a day, you know. And when she had the hydrocephalus, she had to have a shunt put in that would remove the fluid. It had a drain that would go down inside here into the abdomen and release the fluid. She just had a lot of problems. And even today, I mean, she's 38. She's in a wheelchair. She still wears diapers. Her body, as you can see her hands, her fingers, you know. When you don't use your hands and your legs, they get stiff. And so her body has suffered a lot of that, you know. But she, look at her face. What do you see there? She's joyful. She's joyful. And but I went through a really hard time. I tell you, I went through a really hard time because I was like a, did you know that sometimes when there's a wandering sheep that doesn't stay close to the shepherd and it goes off on its own and does things, you know, that sometimes the shepherd will have to break its leg and it'll carry it on its shoulders until it's healed. And then when it's put down, it'll stay close to the shepherd because it trusts the shepherd. Well, I was like that wandering sheep. I got saved when I was 6 years old, but I never grew in the Lord. Even when I was a teenager, I remember one time we had a Bible baseball game, and my question was, I was a teenager. What kind of water did the Jesus offer the woman at the well? And I said, well water. I never grew. Well, this was something. When this happened, I was so devastated. And I thought, nothing can help this. You know, doctors couldn't fix Jessica. There was nowhere I could go to get away from the pain. There was nothing I could do. And my relatives were coming up, and Brian, he was a new Christian, and they could go down to the chapel and they'd pray, but I had to stay on the floor. I couldn't leave the floor. And he'd come back and say, oh, you know, Dixie, we had such a good prayer meeting, and I feel, you know, I really felt the Lord there and all that. But I had no faith. Didn't have faith. Hadn't been working on it. So anyway, I found that there's a lot of benefits from being broken. Jesus said, unless wheat falls into the ground and dies, you know, that it won't produce other wheat. And when Jesus fed the 5,000, he blessed the bread, and then he broke it. Until he broke it, he couldn't feed the other people, you know. And even Jesus said about his own self, you know, this is my body, you know. He broke it. It's been broken for you. So brokenness helps not only you, but it helps other people as well. So what the Lord taught me, I remember one night I felt so guilty about what happened to Jessica. I thought it was my fault. I thought we'd been out to eat. I ate too much pizza, and I caused what happened, you know. I caused that. Look what I caused her life to be like. She's never going to see. She's never going to walk. She's never going to get married. She's never going to do all these things. I felt so horrible. And then one night the Lord gave me a dream. And it was, I was like walking through a parking lot that was empty. And there was this baby bassinet in the parking lot. And I went up to it. And inside I saw a beautiful baby. And all I could think of was the baby. That's my whole focus, was the baby. You know, I didn't realize, as I was talking, there was somebody there taking care of the baby. You know, there was a hand that would put the pacifier in the baby's mouth if it fell out. There was a hand that brought the blanket up if the blanket got kicked off and all that. But my total focus was on the baby. I didn't even really pay attention to that being, you know. And then all of a sudden, I realized this beautiful baby, the scene changed, and the bassinet became a barbecue grill, a round barbecue grill. And the baby became a fish. I don't know why, but it was still alive. And then the hand that was putting the pacifier in the mouth now had a spatula and was turning the baby back and forth, cooking it on the grill, which was a fish now, you know. And I was in total shock. And when he finished, he kind of just set it towards the edge where it was just kind of, the fish was just kind of laying there. And I fell down on my knees and I started crying to that fish that used to be a baby, and I said, I'm so sorry. If I had known this was going to happen, I would have done something. And the fish smiled at me. And then, I know, it's funny. And then I heard a voice that said, what makes you think you could have done anything? This was never your baby. She's always been mine. And I did with her what I pleased. So God taught me that he doesn't have grandchildren. She's his just like I'm his. He did what he pleased with her. She's happy. She's happy with it. You know, the best thing that helped me was to not see things the way the world sees them, because I saw everything that Jessica was going to miss out on. And God taught me, look at how Jessica sees things. You know, she doesn't know that she's missing out on anything. She doesn't have to worry about drugs. She doesn't have to worry about all those other things, you know, that normal, healthy people would have to go. And sometimes they're lost. These kids, my mom and dad used to say, we don't have to worry about Jessica. We know where she's going to be when she dies. But the other grandkids, we don't know, you know. And so it was a blessing. But it took a long time to learn it, you know. Jesus, he taught me to give up my will. I had the way I thought things should be. I wanted her healed. I wanted her to be healed. I wanted her to walk. I wanted her to talk. I wanted her to do all these things. And finally I just had to, you know, God, whatever your will is. And I prayed, Lord, search my heart. Every area of my heart, search my heart. If you find anything that I have a desire for that is not from you, I give you permission to remove it. And in its place, you put something there that's your will for my life, you know. And so that's what he did. He did that for me. I also learned that God's a good God and I can trust him. I learned that I don't have to understand everything, you know. I don't have to understand everything. There's lots of things we're never going to understand. But what I do understand that makes that okay is I know his character. I know he's a good God. I know that he will not let anything happen to me that he doesn't allow. And I know everything that he lets in my life is for my good, a purpose for me. I used to think this is something that had been done to me, but now I realize this is something God has done for me. So, one thing that really helped me was this book. A friend told me about this book. It's been probably 5 or 6 years ago. Have y'all ever heard of it? Hinds Feet in High Places? You have it? It's like kind of like Pilgrim's Progress. It's that kind of a story. But this was a story of Much Afraid that lived in the Valley of Humiliation and all, with all her relatives, the Fearlings, you know, and there was resentment and bitterness and craven fear and just all of them. And she was a servant of the shepherd, and she desired to serve him more. But from where she was, she really couldn't do it. But he promised. She was crippled, too. She was lame in the feet. She could walk, but she'd trip and stuff like that. And then she had a disfigured face. And she thought, you know, what can I ever do for him? But he promised her, you know, if you will follow me, I'll take you to the high places, and I'll give you hinds feet, you know. So it's a really good book if any of you want to read it. I bought 10 copies. So if anybody wants one, you know, I'd encourage you, because it gives me spiritual eyes to what had happened to me. It really opened up my spiritual eyes, and I understood. I remember when I got to one part, he gave her traveling companions to help her up to the high places. And when she met them, they were sorrow and suffering. And she was so disappointed. And I just boo-hooed when I got to that part, because I remember what they were like, you know. They were my traveling companions, you know. But anyway, it really was a good read, and it really did help me spiritually draw closer to him. And then what I want to close with is 2 Corinthians 4:18 says, "So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For the things which are seen are temporary, they're passing away, but the things which are not seen are eternal." And 1 Corinthians 13:12 says, "For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as I am known." So those things that I don't understand, one day I will understand, you know. And it's when you let go of this world and the things of this world, you know, when you go through something that affects you like that, other things aren't important anymore. They're just not important. And when you let go, you can live so freely. You can live so freely to serve Christ rather than to be concerned about having things, or, you know, sometimes your things own you, you know. So, anyway, that's my testimony. I've never done this before, so if y'all have any questions, you can ask me, because I might have skipped some stuff. I don't know.
Electric shock there. Wow. That was really cool. Thank you, Dixie, for sharing that. And I did, as soon as we saw that picture of Jessica, I could just see the, like, joy of the Lord exuding from her face, and it just really touched my heart. But I loved a few takeaways for me was there are many benefits to being broken. And I love that. There are many benefits to being broken. That really ministered to me. And just thinking about what you said, Dixie, about how God taught you to show God taught you to look at the world in a different way because of her, and just taught you to not look at the things of the world as valuable through her. And that's really amazing. And sometimes it's those things, right, the broken things that really make us mindful of him. So that was really special. Thank you for sharing that. So so Jill is going to be sharing next, and she's going to be sharing things she's grateful for in the present. So something I really think of when I think of Jill is the scripture Zephaniah 3:17, and I've shared that with her before, and I'll read it, and it's about the Lord, and it says that he will rejoice over you with gladness, and he will quiet you with his love. And when I see Jill, every time I see her, I just see the Lord working through her in that very perfect sense, that he works through her in the quietness, pouring out his love on us. And she's just so just warm and loving every time I see her. I'm personally very grateful for her. I don't know about you all, but she's going to share something she's grateful for in the present. So if we can welcome Jill.
Thank you very much.
So when Kim asked me to do a grateful in the present, or a grateful in the midst, I wasn't surprised, because the Lord has ways of showing you things that are going to happen before they happen, through his word, or I don't know exactly how to put that, but he kind of already prepared me for it. But then, you know, or me as a woman, I just have ways of letting things overwhelm me really easy. So he has me in this place where he's just got me at a really wonderful peace. And sometimes it's such an overwhelming peace that it's like, I know it's all about God and his awesomeness and his glory. And just to think about that, how he's ministering personally to me is just so special. You know, he created the stars and all the heavens, and here he's ministering to me personally. So that is just awesome in itself. But so forgive me if I look back. I was kind of a mess when I wrote all this. So it's been a long trial. My trial started in January of this year, and it was I was really sad, really depressed, really lonely. And when you're like that, you get kind of stuck in your head, and you don't really look to God for things. Well, he knew exactly what I need, and I have a devotional by Kay Arthur. I just love her. And it said, Lord, I give you this day. And I knew I wasn't giving him this day. So he knew I was sad. He saw my present, how I was, and things were mulling in my head. So he knew that I needed encouragement. He knew, and he answered me that moment in my reading, because I said, Lord, I'm not giving you the day like I should. I don't have you, and I'm not holding you in that reverence you should be held in. So it was Proverbs. A wonderful year-long devotion in the Proverbs 4:11-13. I guide you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction and don't let it go. Guard it as if it were your life.
It's one of God's promises. And Tamar recently taught that, you know, God has a promise for each one of us if we would just ask him for that promise and read through his word, and he'll give you that promise that will really touch your heart. So at that moment, I had to promise that to the Lord that before I get out of bed every morning, that second I wake up, I have to give the whole day to him. I have to live for him. I have to do these things, but I can only do it with his strength, with his courage, with his might. And I have to be in total surrender to his will for that day. And because each day can carry something new and something way bigger than you ever thought. Or just the little things. You have to be present in both of them, in everything. He knew what was around the corner, and he knew how I needed to be prepared. And he knew that I needed to grow and what I needed to study. So something that kept coming back to me is abide in his word and have his word abide in me. And abide means to remain in and be settled and dwell on his word. So that's what I set out to do, is just dwell on his word. He knew that I needed to know that he was in my midst. And so many people shared that verse with me, Zephaniah 3:17. They came up to me and they would say, you know, this verse comes to me and the Lord just wanted me to share it with you. And I would be like, I'm not worthy of that verse. I'm not worthy that he would be in my midst. But he says I am. So the Lord your God in your midst, the mighty one will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you with his love. And he will rejoice over you with singing. And don't miss out on God using people in your life to share these verses with you, or special moments in their life with you, or their testimony, because it's a blessing to you. So you always have to be present with everybody you're with. And then he always gives me, or he's given me, 1 Peter 5:10, but may the God of all grace, who called us to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered a while, he will perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you, and to him be the glory. So the trial with us, as I said, started in January. Mark's sister was in the hospital. Actually, she was in the hospital 3 to 5 times. She was in 3 different rehabs. She was, congestive heart failure, pneumonia, end-stage emphysema. They told us to get her will ready. They told her, you're not going to get out of this hospital. Just a lot of pressure, and a lot of the family didn't show up at all to see his sister. So, we were going back and forth to the hospital. She was up here in Louisville, but we live in Euless, so we would be back and forth to Euless. Mark would go to work in Grand Prairie and come to Euless, and then go up to Louisville, then come home. Then Terry would call, and he'd have to go back. I mean, it was just the craziest time. But then Mark got in, my husband, an upper respiratory infection, and then his neck froze, and he couldn't swallow. And he started hallucinating. We didn't know what was going on. We went to the ER. They said, it'll go away. They're not sure what it is. Okay, thanks. But they said, a different doctor we took him to said mono Epstein-Barr. Then he got pneumonia. Then he got an upper respiratory infection. So we went to the ER 3 times with that. I broke my foot, which I'm 54. I've never broken a bone. So why would I break a bone now? Well, the Lord knows why, but that's okay. We made it through that. Terry was still in the hospital. She was in rehabs. Mark would be running from 5 in the morning till like 11 o'clock at night. And then we would get calls during the night from the hospital. So it was a lot. But then, you know, Terry got better. She got out of the hospital. But Mark got worse. And we took him to the ER for heart problems. And when the cardiologist says, we're going to look at the widowmaker, you have to pay attention. Even though you're like, I don't think he has heart problems. When they say widowmaker, you pay attention. But then that went away. But then Mark woke up one morning and fell out of bed. And he had vertigo. And his vertigo lasted probably a solid month. Just hours of spinning and spinning and spinning to where he couldn't even get up off the floor. And, you know, you have to go to the bathroom. You have to get sick. And I'm sorry if that's gross. But and then his right hand got so much gout in it that it was like this thick. So he couldn't crawl with his right hand to the bathroom. He had to crawl with one arm. And when you see your husband in this position, and, you know, he did so much for our family, so much for, you know, at work. He was constantly go, 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 go. And when you see him, like the sheep, had to break his legs, you know, had to put him down. God had to make him pay attention to God. And that was his way of doing it, you know. Doctors and CAT scans and MRIs, we finally have a nerve and no equilibrium. He's getting better and better, but he's still not allowed to go back to work. So he's been off work since August. So, and in that time, Alex's bedroom ceiling caved in. The upstairs bathroom leaked into the downstairs bathroom, so there was a hole. There's still holes in ceilings, guys. There's a hole in that ceiling. The AC stopped in the car, so in the heat of summer, there was no AC in their car. One of our cars didn't have tires that were good enough to drive in. My dog is sicker than I don't know what. And, you know, there's just... My sons are misunderstood, and that's a hard thing for me. And, you know, we couldn't have done it without our guys being home. I can't tell you how many things they've taken care of. But in that, them growing, it's the Lord. He was growing them during that trial with us. So all of us were having little separate trials. And I say little, I didn't mean little. It's just, you know, there were trials that we had to get through. And I'm sorry about the note. So, you know, a question was asked in the studies, Psalm 46, it was 1-3. It was, who's the first person you go to? And I always went to Mark. I mean, he was my first go-to for everything. Well, he was before the Lord, and he shouldn't have been before the Lord. So that, and I think I shared that during the study, is I'm grateful for the Lord making Mark totally reliant upon him for everything, brought Mark to a stillness where all he could do is just focus on God. And it made me put God in his rightful place. And Mark, not a lowercase God, you know. I shouldn't have gone to him first. And that's one thing I needed to learn, is that, you know, he must increase, I must decrease. Mark, it was like, take up your cross and follow the Lord. And, you know, oh my goodness, it was just one thing after the other. We would sing worship songs together. We would play sermons for him. The guys would read to him. And, you know, that's all he could do. But that's what the Lord wanted. It's just total focus on him. So learning that the Lord is our refuge, that we are to be still with him, helping us to pray for him, an overwhelming amount of peace, sorry, for all that's going on. You know, reading it, it kind of overwhelms me, but living it, it was okay, because that's where we needed to be. That's what we needed to learn. But the Psalm 46 study has been an immeasurable gift. An immeasurable gift. He knew exactly what I needed. When Kim first said it, I was like, oh, that would be a great study for everyone. Well, yeah. Especially you, Jill. Come on. reflecting back, and I'm sorry if I'm going longer, the mine and Mark's 31st wedding anniversary was in July. And we had just a sweet time. We went to breakfast and we had cheesecake, and we never do those things. And we just went to an antique place and just a fun time. And then this happened literally like a few days after. So during this time, it was one of my moments where I was probably having a pity party. And, you know, I was just crying to Mark. And I said, are we ever going to have those sweet moments again where we can just share a piece of cheesecake? I mean, stupid little things, but are we ever going to have sweet moments together? Are you ever going to be okay? And, you know, he was like, I don't know, Jill, but we have to trust in him. We have to trust that he's got this for a reason. And I was just like, I just want my best friend back. And the Lord has totally answered that prayer, that now the moments are sweeter than they were before. Because we wake up in the morning and we share devotionals together. We share psalms together, we pray together, and we sing worship songs together. Things we didn't do before because we were so busy with other things, you know, getting ready. Stupid things. But, and this might not be in the right order, but so November 1st, we went to the doctor thinking for sure he'd be released for work, but not so fast. The doctor says 3 more weeks, and then she goes, or could be 3 more months, and we're like, okay, we have a little more growth to do here. You know, Mark was so heavily discouraged, and he knew his pay went to 50%, so he was like, how am I going to provide for my family? And I'm like, honey, the Lord provides, so we just need to pray. We just need to trust him with all this. And throughout this, and I said, it's easy to trust the Lord when you get full pay, but when you get 50% pay, you've really got to grow that trust in him. He's growing our faith in him. And then for Mark, a big thing to read, and I don't have it right here, and I don't have my glasses for that Bible, was Habakkuk 3, the hymn of faith in there. That's something that he's been going to personally. But I just writing down that I'm grateful for his agape love, his word, his peace, the church family, the well group, prayers. I'm grateful for God for this time, the current trial, thankful for previous trials that allow growth to help me get where I am today. Thankful for his sovereignty and that he knows everything. He knows how I need to grow to get me to that next trial, because it's going to be, you know, who knows what it's going to be. I'm thankful for his glorious word that guides and strengthens me, teaches and molds me exactly what I need and when I need it. I'm thankful that he helps me to be mindful and listen, not perfectly, but somewhat. I read this every day. Isaiah 26:3, you will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you because he trusts in you. Peace with God leads to peace of God. So the peace of God comes when you stop looking at problems and you look only at the Lord. Now my thoughts of him consume my mind. And seriously, when I'm looking, all I think about is it's the Lord and driving. It's the Lord. And look at the trees. Look at the colors he's given us. I mean, oh, my word. And he wakes me up every morning. I have a worship song on my mind the minute I wake up. And he can do this. He's made us, my family, closer together, more compassion, servant in prayer, but more independent, strengthened in growth to be completely dependent on him for everything, not just the hard things, everything. We're not perfect. I'm not perfect for sure. Work in progress. Thankful that he continues to work through me. And I'm just closing with Amy Carmichael, of course. She just speaks to me in so many ways. Thy way is perfect. Long is the way and very steep the slope. Strengthen me once again, O God of hope. Far, very far, the summit doth appear. But thou art near, my God, thou art near. And thou wilt give me my daily food, powers of endurance, courage, and fortitude. Thy way is perfect, only let the way be clear before my feet from day to day. Thou art my portion, say it so, saith my soul to thee. Oh, what a portion is my God to me. He really does give you peace. So, sorry if I'm shaky. I don't do this. This isn't my comfortable place, so I thank y'all.
Sorry, they're tricky. Jill has always had a super special place in my heart, and I've watched her over the years go through different things, and some of the things I think about with Jill and reminders even here tonight while she was speaking was that